And a very good morning to you. It's Greg doing a really, really good Donal impersonation this morning. It is Donal Cavanagh here, of course, standing in for Greg on the show this morning. It's Tuesday. It's the 31st of January, the last day of the first month of the year. We're heading toward the eve of St. Bridget and some great days ahead, hopefully. Many would regard this as being, you know, just heading in toward the first days of spring as well. Is it too early to talk about spring? It's never too early to talk about spring. Things are looking good. In terms of the show, as always, we have a large number of guests lined up, some very interesting discussions to be had. But most importantly, as we always say on this particular programme, the basis of the show, the core of the show, is your contributions, your input, your calls, your concerns. Call us on 074 91 25000. Caroline producing and taking your calls as well. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. We're also contactable on social media at Highland Radio on Twitter, Highland Hub on Facebook. You can email comments at highlandradio.com. Starting as we always do with the papers, and we begin with the Donegal Democrat this morning. Main story: household rubbish dumped at Bottle Bank. You'll have heard the story on the news with Michaela. The most recent incident of illegal dumping at a Bottle Bank has led to a community group to question the future of the local glass and can recycling facility. Six bags of rubbish were left at the Glenties Bottle Bank in recent days, and we know at various points in the past Donegal County Council has considered potentially looking at CCTV as one possible answer in cases like this, and the council has sort of said in the past it's going to be looking at this issue, and certainly based on what's happening in Glenties, we're told at the moment it's important that this is followed through. Front of the Derry Journal this morning: fisherman died when boat sank. A story from the inquest into the death of a Glengad fisherman who died at sea. Daniel McDade of Dentushkirt, Glengad, died on June 28th, 2014 after his vessel sank off Kinnegal Bay. As the inquest began, the Donegal coroner, Dr. Dennis McCauley, apologised to Mr. McDade's family for the delay in it being heard. He said files were being transferred from the previous coroner to himself, and there were two Daniel McDades from Glengad that led to an oversight, he said, and the COVID-19 lockdown also added to the delay in the inquest being held. So the coroner, Dr. McCauley, there apologising to the family of Danny McDade, and you can read about that on the Derry Journal on the front page. Also, of course, Bloody Sunday remembered. 4 o'clock yesterday on the Bogside, a picture of relatives of those who died gathered around the memorial, standing in silence at four. That took place yesterday, which was the 51st anniversary of Bloody Sunday. Of course, on Sunday, there was a march and rally through the city centre. And we also heard from Colm Eastwood, the SDLP leader and Foyle MP, that he was nominating the Bloody Sunday families for the Nobel Peace Prize. He said such a nomination would both honour the families and recognise their contribution. But also, he said, it would be very important in terms of sending a very strong message to the British government in terms of the need for them to fully ensure that the legacy of Bloody Sunday is addressed and that this never happens again. Moving on to the national papers, the Irish Independent this morning: window is closing on cheapest fixed rate mortgages. AIB and Ulster Bank customers warned they could miss out as costs keep rising. Tracker mortgage customers with AIB and Ulster Bank have been warned they're running out of time to lock in two attractive fixed rates. The banks have some of the lowest fixed rates in the market. It's expected they'll be gone in a matter of weeks. Also on the front of the Irish Independent: car dealer and brother guilty of PUP scam. Two brothers alleged to have been involved in a campaign of intimidation aimed at halting land sales have admitted defrauding the state of pandemic unemployment supports. Car dealer John Alex Kane, 49, and his brother, farmer Seamus Kane, 53, both pleaded guilty to pandemic unemployment payment fraud. That's the front of the Independent there. The front of the Irish Times this morning: plans for childminder subsidies for parents go to cabinet. O'Gorman to seek approval to change the legal status of thousands of childminders. Legislation would pave the way for childcare scheme to be opened to more parents. That story by Cormac McQuinn there. Cabinet looking at that issue of childcare, which always is a very, very important issue. Also, coalition urged to appoint migration czar. NGOs raise concerns about safeguarding and welfare in accommodation centres. The government has been urged to appoint a migration czar by an alliance of leading NGOs who say the response to the crisis isn't fast enough. And it's an ongoing issue. Also, Bridget has fallen out of favour ahead of New Bank Holiday, and I just referenced that we're heading toward the Feast of St. Bridget, and with the first Irish Bank Holiday to be named after a woman, will it do anything to revive interest in the name Bridget, asks Ronan McGreevy. Few names have fallen so precipitously out of favour with the Irish public as the one for the Patroness of Ireland, or its most common variations, Bridget, Breed or Breege, Bridie, Breeda, or indeed Breege with the alternative spelling. It's an interesting question. Will the new emphasis on St. Bridget's Day see more Bridgets, Breeges or Breeds named into the future? It's a question that we will watch with interest. Irish Daily Mail this morning. Leo signed off on secret nursing home payouts. Confidential documents show Taoiseach was aware of legal ploy, while two other current ministers were warned over strategy. Craig Hughes, Michael O'Farrell and Brian Mahan write that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar signed off on secret payouts for families who were overcharged for nursing home care. Department of Health documents show the state faced the prospect of €12 billion liability in compensation for hundreds of thousands of families who were wrongly charged for the care of their loved ones over a 30-year period. And there was a discussion between the Taoiseach and Pat Kenny on his show on News Talk yesterday. The Taoiseach said on that show he was never party to devising or agreeing a legal strategy in relation to nursing home charges, but a confidential document shows Mr. Varadkar did approve a continuation of a policy of compensation that cases brought should be settled within 40 to 60% of the claim's value. So says the Irish Daily Mail. Moving on to the tabloids this morning. A special investigation, Ireland's drug runners aged 13. Gardaí cracked down on youngsters doing dealers' dirty work for them. John Hand shows a picture of Gardaí carrying out raids, cracking down on dealers using young kids. Gardaí revealed boys of 13 are carrying drugs to hopeless addicts in Dublin's north inner city. And that's the Irish Daily Mirror's special investigation there. The Irish Daily Star this morning, monster killed own unborn tot. A picture of Dean Padgett, who viciously beat and kicked his ex Lisa Ward, shouting, "I'll rip her out of you," in April 2021. Padgett pleaded guilty to attempted murder and accepted he had ended the life of his 32-week-old baby. His victim said, "All I ever wanted was my little girl, Ruby Rose." And that is the story there on the front of the Irish Daily Star. And lotto winners' woes. "I walked all over Dublin with €1 million in my back pocket." A lotto winner has told how he walked around Dublin with €1 million in his pocket. Mayo OAP syndicate chief Michael Cosgrave collected the bumper check at Lotto HQ and then had to hunt for a bank to take it off him. He said, "I was never so happy to get rid of money all my life." That's an interesting... I must be honest. If I had a check for €1 million and if I was picking it up, I think I would make sure I had my arrangements made and my appointments made. And let's be honest about it, I would probably have security organised as well. And I would know where I was going every step of the way. Now, the chance of me ever walking around Dublin with €1 million in my back pocket, either in cheque form or otherwise, is, to say the least, very remote. I also would have thought at this point in time that certainly we have the big cardboard cheques that we write the numbers on and we get pictures taken for the cameras and for the press and so on and so forth. I find it amazing that they still give people cheques. I would have thought that you would have done transfers like that into bank accounts automatically, digitally, from Lotto HQ. I mean, the idea that you're giving someone a cheque and then they have to go and deposit the cheque into a bank, I would have thought they would have done all that electronically at this stage. Perhaps I'm wrong, perhaps there's a reason for that, and perhaps someone can enlighten me. Right, nearly time for a break before we go to our first caller. Before we go, I just want to say one very quick thing. My first day in Donegal was in September 1990. I came up to the county for an interview on this radio station called Highland Radio, who were looking for someone to work there, and I thought I might fit the bill. So I travelled up from Waterford to do this interview. Sideline, the interview went well, as you've possibly discerned at this point. This was almost 33 years ago. On that evening, I left. I was staying in the Mount Argyll Hotel, so I took a walk into town. My first time really, I'd been in Letterkenny when I was a child, but it was my first time really walking through Letterkenny, see the sights. Stopped off at a restaurant long gone called Steers, had a lovely meal. Walked up through town. As I walked past McGinley's Bar, I heard music coming from inside. It was a really good piece of blues music coming through. I walked in out of interest, got myself a drink, sat down, and I spent two hours watching a really, really great band. They were called the Kingbees. This is my very first night in Donegal, almost 33 years ago, September 1990. The band comprised Steve McGlinchey on guitar, who became a very good friend of mine, Declan Doherty on bass, Don Ponsonby on drums, and Dermot Donoghue on vocals and blues harp on the harmonica. It was a wonderful gig. He was a wonderful singer. I've spoken to and met Dermot several times since then. We became friends over the years. Most recently, he came to a couple of rehearsals and performances by Northwest Opera that I was involved in, and we talked about the joys of singing everything from opera to blues and music, and the joys of music and everything from blues to rock to opera and all points in between. Dermot was a wonderful, wonderful person. Dermot's being buried this morning. My thoughts with his family. And you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's Donal Kavanagh on the show with you this morning. As we say, don't forget, if you want to make contact with us on the programme, you can call us on 0749125000. Text us 086 60 25000. Use that number for WhatsApp messages as well. And as we say, it's always a pleasure to hear from you and to hear from our callers. Just waiting to organise a Zoom call, so if you just bear with us for just one moment, I am going to just go into Zoom here, and we'll be joined by Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh, who made a very interesting point at a meeting of Donegal County Council yesterday. Councillor Kavanagh, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed. Yesterday there was a lengthy discussion on the Council's adoption of a service delivery plan for the coming year, which basically takes the decisions made in the budget, and the Council is now laying out how it's going to implement those particular changes. A number of issues got raised by members, and one of those issues was an issue that's been discussed on this programme before, and that is the issue of the lack of a civic cemetery in the county of Donegal, that there is no civic, non-denominational graveyard burial place in Donegal. And it's a discussion that's been had before, and it's something you believe needs to change.
Yeah, Donald, it's a discussion that's been going on a long time. Now, I noticed yesterday, just in when discussing that there was a section there about burial ground maintenance, but there's nothing about providing burial grounds. And that's a function of the council, and it's a function that we have not been delivering on. And the problem has been well flagged by the mainstream churches, by new residents in the town of minority religions, and by people of no denomination, that we are fast running out of space in the mainstream churches' graveyards. And they have flagged that now for a number of years. You're talking about how long this is going on, Donald. I remember Pascoe Blake raising this when he was mayor of Letterkenny, and that was in 2014. And I don't think that we have really made any progress on it since. And it comes up occasionally, it disappears again until it comes up again, sort of thing. And I think we need a real plan in place as to how we're going to do this. And what was evident to me yesterday was, and you pointed out at the beginning there, that this is not just a Letterkenny thing. I've raised it before at municipal level a couple of times, and I've spoken here about it before. But what was clear yesterday, that it's a problem, as you say, right across the county and other places as well. So, and it is the responsibility of the council to provide burial grounds. But, you know, up to now, that has been done for them by the churches. Mm. But that day is coming to an end, and the churches no longer have space left in the graveyard.
Indeed, I recall you said Pascal Blake mentioned that when he was mayor of Letterkenny, there was a discussion on this programme many years ago. Roy Greenslade, the journalist who has links to Remelton, when this was the Sean Doherty show way back when. I remember Roy Greenslade, when his mother sadly passed away, ended up having to bury his mother in Derry because he did not want to go to a church graveyard. And as he said on the show, there was nowhere to bring his mother in her native county of Donegal.
Yeah, that's right, Donal. And this is the issue that's been raised with me by the smaller minority religions in the area. And they've given examples of people having to bury loved ones in Dublin and in Derry. And in many cases, the people left are elderly people who maybe don't drive, and it's very, very difficult for them to visit the graves of their loved ones. And, you know, in some cases, these are people who, you know, have maybe worked as doctors in a hospital for 30 more years of their life, given their whole life, really, to the county. And then when it comes to the situation where they have to be buried, there's nowhere for them. And that's not right. And, you know, that needs to be addressed. Equally, you mentioned people of no denomination, and all those things have to be addressed. And we can't go on any longer just depending on our mainstream churches to provide burial grounds. We have to step up to the plate here. And I think we need, I appreciate as well, Donald, that, that it's a difficult thing to address, because it's not everybody wants to maybe provide land for a graveyard, and it's not everybody that wants a graveyard in their area and so on, and these things have to be addressed. But I don't think that we want to put it right. I think we need to have a proper plan, and we need to be advertising and trying to identify ground around the county, and I think each municipal area should have its own municipal graveyard.
Has there been any discussion on potential sites up to now? Because, as you say, it's been a live issue for the guts of 10 years, and probably longer. Yeah. There have been discussions. Are there any potential sites marked out anywhere in the county at this point, or are we really starting from scratch here?
To the best of my knowledge, there isn't, Donald. And, you know, this is where the discussion seems to stop when it comes to, you know, well, where are these graveyards? And, you know, no one seems to have made any progress there. And that's the worry. And I think, you know, I know that, that the Catholic Church have flagged very, very clearly to me that this is now a crisis, quickly becoming a crisis. So, you know, we just can't go on until we get to a point where we can't look after this issue.
We do see more and more people going to the crematoria, be it in Cavan or at Lakelands, or be it at Rosemont in Belfast. And there has been discussions about a potential crematorium in Donegal. Now, that hasn't happened as of yet. But, I mean, that is one option. But there are still people who would prefer burial. There is still very much a demand for a civic cemetery. And that's a demand that you believe is not going to go away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Donald. And I take your point about the crematorium. And you do see now that there's more and more people being cremated. But as you say, you know, there are many, many people who would balk at the idea of cremation, and burial would still be the preferred option, I think, for most people in the county. So it's something that, yes, we have to address.
Another issue that was discussed at the council yesterday, indeed the council passed a document which clears the way for the construction of public toilets in the retail parks in Letterkenny, something that you have been very much involved in the discussion on. You're glad to see that go through.
Yeah, I'm delighted with that, Donald. Really glad to see that go through. And it started off my motion about a change in places facility, but it now has, you know, solved a number of problems, because we're getting a change in places facility, but we're also getting disabled toilets and regular toilets at the retail park in Letterkenny. And that's something that, again, as you know, that we've been talking about in the council for years and years and years. I don't know a council that hasn't raised the issue of toilets down there. So it's great that we're killing a couple of birds with one stone here, really, and providing a facility. The facility with regards to changing places is one of these things. It's not the biggest thing in the world, but it's huge for the people that need it. Yeah. You know, it's great that we're able to go ahead now and provide that facility. Very, very important for the town, and it's very important for the families that need such a facility.
Well, as you say, it's not a huge thing necessarily for the wider population, but I'm sure the changing places in particular, maybe for someone who has very specific and very acute needs, maybe the changing places is the difference between them being able to go to town and not being able to go to town.
Absolutely, and it can be the difference, Donald, between them being able to go into, it can be the difference between the whole family being able to go to an event or able to go to town, because if the facility isn't there that one family member needs, it can prevent the whole family from being able to go out. So, you know, as I say, it's not the biggest thing in the world, but it's a big thing for the people that need it. I'm delighted that's going through.
Do we have confirmation of the location of those facilities yet?
Yes, we do. I think it's beside New Look, between New Look and the next, whatever the next building is in the retail park.
So it'll actually be on that front-facing facade. It won't be sort of connected to that little sort of overflow car park behind them.
No, that's my understanding. Yep. That's where it's going, Donald. Yeah.
Very good. Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Good to hear that has been addressed. I mean, and as you say, the topic of public toilets in Letterkenny has been a live one for a long time, and I've no doubt there'll be various restaurants and cafes down that area will be very glad to hear that news as well, no doubt.
Yeah, okay. Donald, thank you very much.
It's our pleasure as always. Jimmy Kavanagh, thank you very much indeed. That's Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh there speaking to us. As we said, the public toilets and that in particular that changing places facility has now been approved and will be constructed. at the retail park there beside the New Look premises, and also that discussion about the civic cemetery. As we said way back when, I remember Roy Green stayed on this programme 10 years ago at least, if not longer ago, speaking about the time his mother sadly passed away, and he did not have any way of burying his mother in a non-denominational graveyard in Donegal. As I recall, he ended up bringing her to Derry, and that was a matter of regret to him. So it's an ongoing conversation. It's a conversation that's been had before, and it's a conversation that is starting again, and perhaps on this occasion, given that we've had that discussion on that service plan, what's now going to happen is the council officials have said they will take the issues that were raised by the councillors yesterday. The service plan obviously is an overall document which states in general terms where the money is going to be spent and how it's going to make the promises made in the budget real. What now happens is the council officials will go to the strategic policy committees, discuss with councillors how they're going to implement and how they're going to move on the issues that the various councillors raised. Councillor Cavan, as we said, raised that whole issue of the civic cemetery. There were also discussions on the need to improve the fire service, particularly on offshore islands. There was a discussion about public lighting in towns and villages, both in terms of the making sure it's maintained and working, and also in certain areas. Councillor Niamh Kennedy made the point that, you know, we could be returning to more elegant looking black lamps with period style lampshades, even though they have LED lights, that public lighting doesn't have to be big, huge, ugly monstrosities. Also discussions about the funding of roads and other issues as well. Just a few comments that have come in before we go for a break. A caller says, a lot of cemeteries in Northern Ireland are run by the various different district councils. This has been the case for several decades. Most of these cemeteries are Catholic Church, Church of Ireland, or Presbyterian by origin, and a combination of all three, but they're now run by local district councils. That's Senan St. Johnson. And I know the city cemetery in Derry City Council has certainly got a role in running the city cemetery in Derry, because if ever there's to be a closure of city cemetery for whatever weather or whatever, that notification comes not from a church, it comes from Derry City Council. Another caller says, great news about the cemeteries, but let's remember when these graveyards are run by the councils, there are closing times, people will not be able to visit when they like, often in bad weather they're also closed. Let's be careful what we wish for. And yeah, and that's just the point I made, that sometimes Derry City Council will close the city cemetery in Derry. Now, it won't do so without good reason, I'm sure, but as I said, this debate's been going on for well over 10 years. And I think we're at the point at this stage where we will, it's not going to happen tomorrow. We will not be seeing civic cemeteries developed in Donegal tomorrow or the next day, I would imagine. It's we're talking years more than months, but you know, it's a discussion we've had several times. It's never gone anywhere. Perhaps this time the discussion will actually go a little bit further than it has done in the past. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you from now until, as the name suggests, 12 noon. We're going to take a short break. Back after these.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook, and at highlandradio.com.
This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you on till noon. Now, we're joined in studio by Charlie Boyle, who's the CEO of the Customer Service Excellence Ireland. Charlie, great to see you this morning, and you're very welcome indeed to the programme. Right, I'm going to actually, Charlie, can I ask you to pull that mic over to yourself? I'm having difficulty with the mic here on at the moment. I do apologise for this, actually. Right, okay, if you, we have it now, yep, okay.
All right.
Absolutely. That's excellent. So, Charlie, you're the CEO of the Customer Service Excellence Ireland, and there is a feeling abroad that in the past couple of years, customer service and hospitality in particular has disimproved. The onset of COVID possibly having something to do with that. What's your take on this?
Yeah, well, we actually conducted a survey there in recent weeks. We shared it with you there yesterday, and that, again, the anecdotal evidence would suggest that as well. Now, against huge challenges, it must be said, you know, hospitality and retail were both hit by COVID. Many would suggest, you know, in a stronger way than other sectors. So they have been challenged. I suppose then the question that we put out in the survey that we conducted nationally in January, just in the last few weeks, is, has it disimproved since the onset of COVID? So has the last 2 years you know, seen that disimprovement, because we're probably a year out from COVID and we're getting back to, you know, what many will refer to as this new normal, whatever that's going to be. And it's they're two hugely important sectors. Retail's the biggest employer in Ireland, and, you know, followed by the importance of hospitality and tourism. So the evidence on the survey that we've carried out would suggest that, yes, you know, with hospitality and tourism, 77% of those surveyed suggested that it's disimproved. And in retail, 67% of those, you know, in relation to retail and their experience with it, would say that it is disimproved. Now, what we haven't gone into is to see how big is that disimprovement, but by and large, you know, it would suggest that there is a disimprovement over the last number of years.
Could this partly be down to the fact that maybe some people are more nervous now going out, that in the past it was nothing just to walk through a crowded shop, particularly on a Saturday or whatever, and you wouldn't be thinking? A lot of people now will be walking through shops, and if there's a big crowd and if they're sort of jostling and jostling through, they're not going to be quite as comfortable as they might have been 3 years ago. And could that be feeding into this to a certain extent?
It could be, but I would imagine that would have been more relevant last year or maybe 18 months ago. So we're getting confidence back. All getting confidence back and going into malls. What seems to be suggested from the survey are two areas. One, staffing levels, because in hospitality, tourism, and in the retail sectors, there, you know, it was impacted by, again, the term that's widely used there, of this thing of the great resignation. People left work, they went to work elsewhere. Right. Some people were paid off and they went, you know, maybe to work in healthcare or other areas that there was a greater demand, and they didn't come back. So the two areas that we're seeing, low staff levels, 37% of people surveyed suggested that the staff levels are too low, both in hospitality and in the retail sector. And lack of training comes up at 56%, because what you're seeing is a lot of new people entering both of those sectors and perhaps not necessarily getting the training that is required, because, you know, we're living in what is now the experience economy. We're looking for greater experiences than we ever looked for before. So we're not just going in for food at a certain price or clothes at a certain price. There's an overall experience at play, and that's the same in any sector. That could be in engineering, it could be in healthcare. And if the level of staffing is not at the level that it needs to be at, plus the level of staff who are properly trained, well, both of those will cause a deficiency, and therefore, you know, there's an impact negatively on the customer experience or the patient experience or the guest experience, whatever that may be. So it's not a doomsday situation. It's not a doom and gloom. It's actually, there's a huge opportunity. There's an opportunity to look at the numbers critically and to, you know, listen to what, you know, the surveys are saying. Low staff numbers levels is going to be a challenge, but lack of training shouldn't be a challenge, because there is an awful lot of support out there and there are structures in place. You know, people like Retail Ireland create fantastic apprenticeships. You know, the skills, SkillNet programs, Skills to Advance by the likes of the ETVs. There are programs there that will fund and support training. But and I suppose the challenge for the owners, it's very, very easy to blame, and it shouldn't be about blame. Yeah. You know, sometimes we look to see who's to blame here. But certainly for the owners, you know, just to make them aware that training supports are available, and those training supports can be very agile. It could be 2-3 hour sessions that could do, you know, make a 20% impact and improvement on, you know, the overall performance.
It does seem, though, that there are times when retail and retail workers don't necessarily get, if I can put it bluntly, the respect they deserve. I remember having a conversation with someone in here a while ago, and we were saying, you know, if there was 50 jobs announced in a factory or in a office setting, it'd be a big, huge news story. If 50 jobs are announced in retail, it's like, yeah, there's 50 jobs in a shop. And there's almost a sense, I think it changed during COVID when people suddenly realised, hang on a tick, there are people working in the supermarkets every day, there are people making sure that when I go out to get my milk or my bread or my dinner or whatever, there are people there to serve it to me. And I think there was a more rounded appreciation of people in the retail sector during COVID. Maybe that's sort of starting to ease back a bit now, and maybe what we need to do societally is have more respect for those who work in retail, because it is at times a damn hard job to do.
Without question. And, you know, the statistic would say that in the private sector, retail is the biggest employer. The other significant thing about retail is not focused on one area. Finance, for example, might be focused in the Dublin, you know, the square mile in Dublin. Retail is in every parish, it's in every island, it's in every rural area in Ireland, so it's spread out. So the 300,000 jobs are spread out. Retail and sometimes hospitality and tourism are sometimes seen as jobs until I get a real job. And it shouldn't be seen like that, because there are serious careers within retail, hospitality and tourism. And people like Retail Ireland are creating now degrees in retail management. You know, you can do an apprenticeship, which takes you up to the second year of a degree course by working in retail. So the pathways to progress within retail are huge. You know, jobs that are paying 60,000-70,000, you know, area manager positions, which are really 2 years away from working in a shop. And you're absolutely right. The respect that essential retail workers got during COVID, you know, they were like frontline staff. Mm-hmm. So I suppose what the stats are saying in this survey is that, yes, it's disimproved, but let's see that as an opportunity. It's very easy to be critical. Don't be critical. You know, I think the customers have a part to play in this as well. I think at times we feel we're a bit too entitled. You know, there's been a lot of damage with COVID. Owners are trying really, really hard to get their staff levels back up. We need to give them a wee bit of slack. We may not get the service we got 2-3 years ago, but when they adjust and, you know, if they come back and look at the issues like training and staff levels, we can take it back up. And I think Ireland needs to own this, really, internationally. You know, we promise 100,000 welcomes. It's the only strapline in the world that, you know, can't meet a falch. It's a big, big brag. It's a big ask. So if we're creating an expectation, we need to match and exceed it as well. So, you know, it's an area of focus, certainly for the months ahead. That, you know, the statistics that we've come up with, yes, they're alarming, but they're not alarming that we pull the blanket over our head. It's the very, very opposite. Let's get up and do something positive about it.
In terms of the training you've been discussing there, how does that get disseminated and who runs it? Are we talking about doing it through the chambers? Are we talking about doing it through Retail Ireland, doing it directly through government, perhaps through one of the training agencies? What's the pathway to that training to ensure that it gets to the widest possible number of people?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I mean, training is available. Not all training is free. There should always be a contribution by the owner and provider. But there should never seem to be just a cost. You know, we would always talk about what's the cost of not doing it, you know. So the investment is very, very small. The likes of Retail Ireland are there to help. They're actually based here in Letterkenny. The Retail Ireland SkillNet is based down in the CoLab. But, you know, any other agency, sometimes it's agile training. Sometimes it's only training of the likes of 3 hours. Companies like ourselves provide training. We can work it around what the owner or the customer needs and take the training to where the trainees are. You know, this thing of pulling them away to a college, and, you know, logistically it's about, you know, doing it in the premises. Work-based learning is a big one now as well, so short courses, and then a lot of their learning is done in the workplace. So yeah, it's clearly available and a lot of the time funded as well.
Finally, Charlie, in terms of the findings, are you confident that with that training, with perhaps more public awareness, that when we come back in a year's time in January, February of 2024 and discuss the situation, that we will see better figures in terms of the research?
No, I'm not confident. I'd be confident that any business that does it will have that impact. But sometimes we are very, very slow, you know, going to the field of training and putting it in. You know, no other sector, I suppose, does less than the sectors that we've looked at here. And statistically, that would be true. We're just not doing enough. We're doing it at the management level of it, but, you know, frontline staff training is something that is lagging behind. But to answer the question, those companies that do invest in it will see a change of 30-40% in terms of performance, and that relates to the bottom line. So it's of economic benefit to do so.
And are you getting the feel from the retail sector that they are going to buy into this and they do want to tackle this? Because I'm sure any provider, be it in retail or be it in hospitality, they're going to be concerned by those figures, because they're looking too at building up their own post-COVID business again. Many places starting from a slightly lower base, particularly in the hospitality sector, which faced huge closures, and in certain elements of retail obviously faced major closures over the course of the COVID as well. So it's, I suppose, in their interest as they're building back up, and they're building back up, and we're still really less than a year out of COVID, if arguably we're out of COVID at all. We're just living with it, as you said, in that new normal. So from their point of view, they're going to, I'm sure, need that boost, and they'll recognise they need the boost in order to get them back to where they want to be.
Yes, yeah, we are seeing that. I mean, January has been our busiest month for the last 4 years in terms of tenders that are coming in. So that's tenders coming in from both hospitality and the retail sector for agile short courses and customer service, and some of them more longer term as well. So this is not news. You know, retailers and hospitality sectors, both of them can be credited with one thing, is they often look at the reality very, very honestly, and they'll tackle it. So there have been quite a few tenders out, and, you know, we've secured work before Christmas for the year ahead in this area of training and development.
A couple of comments coming in that'll be before I let you go. Caller says, I've worked in a shop and as a waitress, and since COVID, the abuse we've taken has definitely increased. And the excuse is, oh, it's mental health. There is never any excuse for lack of manners. And I do agree that the level of staff training that's given in many places is ridiculous. Another caller says, customers are not talking with their feet. I hate those self-service tills. I pay good money to shop in a store and I expect good customer service. That's an interesting one, the self-service tills. Where do you sit on those ones?
I would agree with the caller. I mean, you know, the statistics are that in the future skills, you know, there have been so many future skills reports done in the last 3 or 4 years, and they point out the following. The breakdown of the skills for the future that we require are product knowledge, 37%. So if you're working in retail, you need about 37% of the product knowledge there. Digital skills only at 14%, and human skills at 49%. Mm. So here we are in a digitally disrupted environment, economy. Are we pushing it too far digitally? Are we getting people to go on apps? Are we getting people to go to self-service? Yes, it speeds it up, but at what price? Mm. So not everybody wants to go digital. And, you know, people still want the human contact, but you can have both. You know, the digital is there to enhance the human touch, not to replace it. And I think what we've done, as we always do, is we go too far one way and then we leave the other. But 49% of the skills of the future are in the area of human skills. So the last caller is absolutely right. If she doesn't like self-service, and if there's not another option there to deal with a human, she or he will go elsewhere. There's no question about that.
And really, it's a matter of the big fear is always going to be that eventually what we will see are completely self-service shops. We're already seeing now there's a number of petrol stations, filling stations here in Donegal and around the country where you go, you tap in what you want, you then put in your credit card, you pay for it, then you pump it, then you drive away and you don't see a person.
Yeah, and that can happen, but I think there's been a lot of scaremongering that we're going to be dealing only with robots. And you know, the issues there are the digital does work. We all love our digital. We get up in the morning, we check the news, you check out how many key you've walked this morning. I think it was 5.5, fair play to you. And, you know, the digital is all, we all buy into it, but it's like balance. Balance is so, so important. And those petrol stations, you know, save somebody being there overnight. But it's about putting the human then into a more responsible role. So let the digital do the things that are perhaps, you know, not needed by a human, but make sure then that we get the humans that were working in those roles and get them into a more responsible role, overseeing, managing, contacting with the customer. And given, you know, what the statistics would say is that 49% of the skills of the future are going to be human skills. So we can't all fall into this thing that we're all going digital. You know, only 14% of the skills of the future are seen to be digital. So we're forgetting that things like compassion and communication and empathy and leadership are still there to be trained, even in the digitally disrupted world.
Charlie Boyle, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much indeed for speaking to us. Charlie is CEO of the Customer Service Excellence Ireland. The surveys have found that the perception is that customer service in retail and tourism hospitality has disimproved since 2020. Looking at ways of countering that, Charlie, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Donald. Thank you.
The best music on your station.
This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal standing in for Greg on the programme this morning. Now, there's a lot of talk about renting and evictions, and we know at the moment that there is a ban on evictions, so people cannot be asked to leave their homes. However, that is going to change in the coming days, and I'm joined on the line by Martin. Martin, good morning to you.
How's it going, Donal?
I'm very well indeed. Martin, you've been renting in West Donegal now for 3 years, and you have been contacted by the owner with some important news. Tell us your story.
Oh, I moved down to Letchimica Ward over 3 years ago to work with the company. And I got a phone call and emails stating that the owners were coming back for good because they were putting a re-child to school. So we had a look for a premises after that. Like, we were notified in April. And now we had been on to the council since April because there were no houses available. And I have three small kids. And council weren't doing nothing for us at that stage. Like, they were turning their backs to us every time we contacted them. And it was only up until end of July that they gave me an option was, if I wanted to get on a council list, I had to give up my job to get a house. And we had to be out of the house by the 1st of September. And a German woman now, and fair play to her, she heard our circumstances, and she told us now before we ever moved into her property that she would be moving back to her house for good in Ireland on February the 4th.
Yeah.
She was hoping then that we would get started one way or another, that the council would help us. But we're still in the predicament that we're not getting no help. I was down last Wednesday, and they told me that there were two houses in Glenties available. Now, I never put Glenties down on my option. Like,
yeah.
They told me to change my option to Glenties, which I did on Wednesday. Well, I received a phone call on Friday, being told that there were no houses at all. And now, I am originally from Dunganilly, and that's my hometown.
Yeah.
And there are two houses vacant, one over 10 years, and the other just under it. And now, the third one is coming up on the property now, this week. And they're telling us that there's no houses at all.
Yeah.
And all they were fit to offer us was a voucher for a B&B. And there's not a B&B, not from Glenties, Sardra, Killybegs, nowhere. We'll take a family on.
Yeah. I understand, been offered HAP, that Housing Assistance Programme, but the problem is actually finding a landlord, finding someone that owns the house that's going to take HAP at the moment.
Yeah, or even, not even HAP, like, I would pay even private as I go back to work. But there's not even a private house out there. And, like, with all the stress and everything else, like, my partner ended up in miscarriage, I ended up being sick, and ended up then, car broke down, I've no transport now because I'm out of work. I can't fix the car or nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, can I hit lower than rock bottom? And there's no help. Like, my sisters are willing to take us in, but that's leaving 12 of us in a four-bedroom house.
Yeah. And in terms of the council, I mean, are there issues with, you were saying your home area is Dunkaneely, but you couldn't get there. Is that because you didn't have Dunkaneely down? Is that because Dunkaneely is in a different electoral area to Glenties? I mean, Dunkaneely, as far as I know, is in the Donegal electoral area. Glenties is in the Glenties electoral area. Is that part of the problem, that you're looking at different electoral areas, you're looking at different districts of the county?
No, there don't seem to be really much of a problem there. I'm in Glenties at the minute, so is it the low council that takes over the Glenties side?
Well, there's different electoral areas. I mean, it's all the same council, obviously, but you've got the Glenties electoral area. Their base is in Dunloe, and they cover sort of Dunloe, Glenties, Ardra, Letchimica Ward, that area up towards Gwydor and the Rosses. Then you've got the Donegal electoral area that would really sort of start down south of the Guibara, say, down toward Killybegs, Donegal Town, Dunkaneely, Inver, Mount Charles, and those areas. So they're different electoral areas. Now, I'm not sure if that has... Certainly, housing list figures are compiled for each electoral area. Now, how easy it is to go from one to the other, I'm not sure.
Well, now as far as I knew all along, that because I'm in Glenties, they just don't know how to deal with us.
Yeah.
And then once you go halfway through that, Donegal deals with that onwards towards Killybegs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I was told over the phone, way back there before Christmas, that because of our circumstances... The council from Dunloe and Donegal, we're going to join together and help us.
Right.
Now, after Christmas, now when I go back on the phone to them, because I fell under the means, because I was over 2,000 on the means to get on the list, I was told by Donegal that no, we're not joining together.
Yeah.
They're building their hopes up and then just crushing them. And like, at the end of the day, my son's in school, and it's going to affect his education because he's been pulled out of the school now tomorrow and trying to get transferred into another school, and this is the problem as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, have you spoken to any of the councillors in the area? I mean, obviously, there are some very good councillors in both the Dlantys and the Donegal electoral areas. I mean, have you managed to speak to any of the councillors? Because they, very often, councillors can help you just negotiate that maze of officials and red tape that inevitably exists.
I have actually spoken to, from Gweedore, the whole way up to Killybegs, to Larry Kenny, actually to Melford, to all, every councillor. Now, the only one that seemed to be kind of helping us more pushing was New Kendi, which fair play to her, like she has taken it far more up the ladder. I've even contacted the housing minister in Dublin, and I was kind of pushed back down the ladder again.
Yeah.
And I even contacted Micheál Martin and that, and it's the same thing. We're just kind of, the people in Donegal are just being forgot about. And I don't think it's right, like.
Yeah. So where to now? I mean, what's your situation at the moment? The house you've been in, you have been asked to vacate by tomorrow because the owner is moving back.
Yeah, no, I was, no, before we moved into this house, she did state that she was moving back into the house on the 4th of February before we actually moved in to the house. So you can understand that side of it, like.
Yeah.
But tomorrow, I will be moving back to Dunkinary and to my sister's house. And that'll leave us 12 in the house.
Yeah. And obviously that's neither good for yourself and your family, nor for your sister and her family.
No, none. Because as it is, like, it's affecting my relationship with my partner. Because we're stressing out that much.
Yeah.
We don't know where we're going. We don't know before this. We don't know if our wage will be on the streets.
Yeah.
Or what. And they get affected even Christmas for our own housing, for our wins.
Yeah.
Only for the generosity with people out there that have kids and that helped us a wee bit, like him, towards championing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, my kids will woke up with nothing. That's the kind of situation where we're left.
Yeah, Martin, the sad thing is there are other people in the same situation as yourself. And is it your fear that if you then move into your sister, you know, that the council's view will be, that's okay, he's sorted, we can move on?
It is. Because proud people can't live in a four-bedroom house.
No.
It's going to be me, my partner, and my three kids going to be living in one bedroom. That's the situation now at the minute.
Yeah.
And that's not good for nobody.
So from the point of view then of your next move, I mean, as you say, you're moving to your sister's and that will be in the coming, you know, in the coming days. You're obviously going to have to keep on trying with the council to see what can be done in terms of getting you a house. Is it your hope that you will be able to get a house through the council, be it in Letcher, be it in Dunkinely, or be it in Dlantys?
Yeah, well, I really am hoping, to be honest, because I'm not going to stop. Like, I'm not going to stop going up to the council office and seeing every day if I have to.
Yeah,
what's going to be available?
And plus, in terms of work, you were saying that you were in a situation where the council had been suggested to you that you give up your job. In terms of that, I mean, are you going to go back to work, or what situation are you in there?
Well, as far as I have been told by the council, until I either get a homeless hap, then I can go back to work, and I really want to go back to work.
Yeah.
I don't like sitting at home, to be honest.